We're now going to be going through and discussing a thing called a balance sheet. And there's two key documents that you basically have. Now, this is section 4 in your book. And you're going to find as we go through this, we're going to be talking about the balance sheet. And this, in addition to the balance sheet, the profit and loss statement, are the two key documents that you're really trying to get yourself involved with and check in detail. And these are the areas that you're going to have the most experience, either doing it on your own or having a CPA or an accountant help you also as you go through this area. And again, what we're attempting to do here as we go through this section is we're attempting to uncover the different problems you're going to have come up 97% of the time. There's a number of other things come up, but they don't come up in a significant number. And so what you should do is learn the different areas that you're going to have problems with, and then as you go on, you're going to pick up an education in the other areas. But again, we're not going to cover anything that doesn't happen continually. And again, if you go out tomorrow and spend a week, by the end of the week, you'll be able to teach this section. What I'd like you to do first to make it easier for yourself as we go through section 4 is why don't you turn to page 4-9 and pull 4-9 out of your book, which happens to be the balance sheet for the ABC company. And again, what is a balance sheet? A balance sheet is basically a document that tells us in business what the assets are, what the liabilities are, what the net worth is, or how much does the owner own, which is basically the net book value. And what we find is if you want to figure out what this is mathematically, it's assets, which is the little things you can clutch, the cash, the equipment. You then subtract a thing called liabilities. What do you owe on these items, or what do you owe in the business? You subtract that, and you end up with what? You end up with a thing we call the net worth, okay, or how much the owner has in this business as basically a book value. Now, the thing you have to realize, you start to go through this, we go to 4-1, we have a document like most other documents in business that are not very accurate. These documents are misrepresented. Many of these documents are manufactured on the dining room or the kitchen table. So you're going to find they're sort of made as instructed or made as to whatever the people are asking for them. So be very careful as you're checking these things out. I also want you to realize, for those of you buyers, we also use the balance sheet as a negotiating tool. We use that after we've arrived at a price, maybe of $100,000, to then go back to the seller asset by asset. And if the assets don't make too much sense or we don't believe we want to buy them, we negotiate with the seller to have the seller subtract those from the price and have the seller keep those assets. And in that way, we end up lowering the amount of money we have to pay for the company. We do this all the time. We'll talk about that later. First of all, on page 4-1, we have understanding financial statements. We're going to talk about four different categories of statements, keeping in mind that none of the statements are very accurate. First of all, the audited statement. And if you haven't been in business before, you're always coming to people like myself and say, I'd like an audited statement. Well, that's fantastic. But the problem is, in order to get an audited statement, it costs tens of thousands of dollars and takes months to provide one. You're going to find that they're usually for a specific period, usually 1 year. There's a limited scope of CPA opinion because it's incomplete. There's also, read the opinion carefully. It may spell out problems. In other words, on the front, they don't only have the disclaimers and tell you how much auditing they did do, but it also spells out the problem areas that they are aware of. It's prepared by a CPA. And again, the reliability is based on how good the CPA is or how much expertise they have or how much the owner tried to pull off on them. And keep in mind, when you start to think about it, there's a number of companies out there over the years that have had audited statements and have misled the public. Again, I think of Equity Funding. I think of First National Bank in San Diego. I think of Rolls-Royce, Pennsylvania Railroad, Lockheed, Chrysler. A lot of these companies had audited statements. And again, for a long period of time, they sort of fooled you. And again, the audited statements we don't think are that good. Again, they're better than what you're going to run into, but the chance of running into an audited statement, unless you happen to be buying a company that has been franchising, or maybe a company that is selling stock in the stock market, they have to have audited statements. Or it may be a large company that is getting a lot of bank financing for expansion or to keep going. In a lot of cases, the banks or the lending institutions will require them to have audited statements. But the rest of the time, you're not going to find them. The next one is the interim statement, usually not audited. Use the business to evaluate performance. Again, it's not exactly as good as an audited statement, but again, when we see them, we check everything out. We dot every I and cross every T. Why? Because over the years, we have found, as you'll see in a short while, most of them are very Mickey Mouse and certainly not accurate. The unaudited year-end statement, again, we're getting worse and worse here. It's signed by the company officer, dangerous, should have internal book audit. Again, the unaudited year-end statement is about as accurate as they want to make it. The estimated statement, which is really terrible, It's dangerous to base opinions on estimates. You need the figures that are clearly defined and precisely executed. And what you have is an estimated statement. These are the ones that are basically in the category of what's developed on the ironing board or what they made up on their kitchen table or on the cocktail napkin at a bar somewhere. So what we're saying is be careful as you go through the statements. And again, I want you to become neurotic. What I want you to do is understand there's a lot of fraud involved, some intentional, some not. What I want you to realize is just verify things. Take your time, dot the I's, cross the T's, and go slowly. You're not going to get ripped off. Now, as we start to go through this, you can probably follow this on 4.3 and 4.4. But we're going to be going through the different assets. And the first category that you're going to have, as you look at the balance sheet on 4.9, is you see a thing called assets at the top. And the first thing is current assets. And what we have here under current assets, if you're looking at 4.3, it says the cash plus those items which the company plans to convert to cash in the course of its normal marketing process and in the regular contact of business. These are available conversion to cash as needed. And these are basically things that can be converted in the next year to pay items in the next year. Now, as we start to go through this, I'm going to be following a different type order. I'm going to be starting with aging accounts receivable. But in order to do that, let's take the assets, and I'll start with the third one. Again, we're going to come up to the top and go down, but I will cover all five of them. Let's take the accounts receivable. The accounts receivable is $120,000. And what we're talking about here is somebody has come to the company here, and instead of paying cash, they want to pay for it in 7 days, 14 days, 30 days, which we do. We then carry it on our books or on the balance sheet as a thing called the accounts receivable. This is money owed to the company, $120,000. But the thing is, are they collectible? And although we mentioned this other parts of the TAPE program, there's two things we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing a thing called aging the receivables to find out how many of them are accurate. And the other thing we're going to do, in the offer to purchase later in the program, we're going to make sure that the seller of the business guarantees the receivables. So if there's certain ones that we take over as buyers that we cannot collect on, the seller makes them good. Okay, we'll get to that later in the program. But right now, let's take the receivables. And what I'd like you to do, keeping 4.9 out, I'd like you to put your finger in the page at 4.3 and turn to the back of the section, or if you'd like, turn to the back and pull out the next to the last page, or just look at it, and that's page 4.13. And what we have on 4.13 is a schedule of accounts receivable, an aging of accounts receivable. What we have here is we have a list of companies, and again, we don't have all of them. I just took a cross-section of them. I didn't take all the companies that make up the $120,000 that's owed. So we took five of them. We have Al's Manufacturing, the LS 7000, Bob's Retail. And as we go through this, we find of the 7000 of Al's Manufacturing, 7000 is current. Okay? They're not past due. So it looks pretty good on the surface. But going down to the third one, we have Cal's Deli, and they happen to owe us $12,000. Of the 12,000, as you can see here, 8,000 is current. Hey, that's good. But we notice going over to the right, 3,000 is 30 days past due. And we have 1,060 days past due. And you're going to find as you start to get up towards 60 days past due, it becomes very difficult to collect the money. And incidentally, if they're already up around 60 days past due, 1,000 and 3,000, 30 days past due, how collectible will the 8,000 be? And why are we still giving them credit? But the thing you have to keep in mind when you're going through a scheduling or aging of accounts receivable, we're also talking about what here? We're talking about our customers, and you don't want to just blatantly, when you go in to buy a company or get involved in a company, just go out and say, well, look, these people are past due. We're going to put them on COD. You may end up losing your largest customer, and what you may have to do is you may have to go into that business, buy it, take over those receivables, and then start going to a person like Cal's Deli, who may be a large customer, and say, hey, look, you're 6 days past due. Let's start moving it back, and maybe over the next couple of years, you'll get it back to 50 to 5 days past due, 50. You don't want to break them. 45, with the ultimate goal a year or so from now, or maybe 2 years from now, getting them back in line with maybe 30 days past due. Or you may have to accept the fact that they're always going to be 60 days past due and make that your standard payment period and stay on top of it so it doesn't crawl up to 90 days. One of the temptations that many of you are going to have is to buy these at a discount because you hear about it all the time. Any ones that aren't any good, buy them for 10 cents on a dollar. Well, a normal company you get involved in, the people that you have now that are collecting this money are going to be the same people collecting later. And even though you, as the owner, may be a little stronger in the area, you're going to find they're very difficult to collect. And what I try to do in most cases when I'm buying a company or suggesting to you, why not just say to the seller of the business, this one doesn't appear to be collectible. Why don't you keep that? And we'll subtract that, in this case here, $12,000. We'll subtract it from the price of the business. Well, we find in most cases, if the seller is very knowledgeable, the seller knows he or she is going to have trouble collecting this after they end up selling the business. So what most of them end up doing in closing or at the close of escrow is they'll turn them over to the buyer and say, look, if you can collect this $12,000, we can split it. What happens is you don't have any money invested other than the fact that you're going to have labor invested. If you then collect it, you end up getting half of it. If you don't, it hasn't cost you anything. So be careful of this thing of discounting. Although it may work in some cases, buying at a discount, we find in a lot of cases that you end up paying money. Again, even 10 cents on the dollar isn't worth it if you're not able to collect that 10 cents. So be careful of these bargains. Now, as you start thinking about the receivables later and you're going out to buy a business, one of the things that we run into when we're first getting involved in a business, we'd like to know what type of customers we have, who they are. Sometimes a seller will hold this back and not give it to you until you have to make the offer. Quite often what you could do, is if they're turning you down on that, is asking for an aging of the accounts receivable. And the thing that's fascinating, it surprises me how many sellers do not even know what they're giving you. Now, from a seller's standpoint, I suggest you take it from the other side. And again, I agree, do not give out your customer list or your supplier list until after the offer has been made and the offer has been accepted and you feel good about the other party. Now, as you start to look at the accounts receivable, again, you buy standard sheets, and you buy these standard sheets from the stationery store. If you have a computer printout, it's a standard item. And what I want you to do after you start to buy your company is work on these to make sure these things are being collected on time. Because as they extend out, you're going to find they become increasingly difficult to collect, and you end up having to write off all sorts of money that your business should have collected and should have gone to the bottom line as a thing called what? A thing called profit. Now, the thing that also I like about you as a buyer going out and asking for this aging is the average person buying a business does not know what an aging is or even what accounts receivable aging is. Once you do this, you're going to find the seller is going to go to the CPA or accountant and say, hey, I have a buyer. The buyer would like the aging. You're not only going to impress the seller, you're also going to do a good job of impressing the CPA because most CPAs that are very knowledgeable in selling know that only knowledgeable buyers ask for things like this. The average buyer doesn't even know what it is. What I'd like you to do now is let's go back to the page we were working on, 4-3, also with the balance sheet off to the side also, maybe to the right. And we've talked about the accounts receivable. And again, of the 120,000 receivables, if we find 12,000 are not collectible, how much are we able to subtract from the price we're going to be paying the seller? The 12,000, as long as we get them to take those back, he or she. Going north, the next thing we have up here is a note receivable. Under notes receivable of $65,000, I just want to say one thing. In all the years I've been in business, I really don't recall the last time I saw a legitimate note receivable. Because quite often, these are notes made out because this corporation has formed a new corporation, and there was a loan made between the old corporation and the new one. The new corporation fails, they still leave the note on the book. How valuable is a note from a corporation that has gone down the tubes? I don't think it's very valuable. So why not give that back to the seller and lower the price? The other thing we run into in here area here on notes receivable and also on notes payable are loans back and forth between the officers. And all I'm going to say is one thing. If there are loans back and forth between the officers of the company and the company, why not just let the officers keep them? Because we find the owners are doing that either to minimize or avoid paying income tax on profits they should from the company. So give them back to them. In fact, I just want to say one thing, and that is if you find a legitimate note receivable, send me a copy of it. I haven't seen one in probably 8 or 9 years, maybe 10. The other thing in notes receivable you have to be careful of is quite often when people are borrowing money from a bank, especially on 90-day loans, the bank officers stay on top of their collecting of the receivables because if they're not collecting the receivables, it kills the cash flow of the business, and the bank officers worry. Quite often, when an officer in a company is having trouble collecting the receivables, knowing full well that the bank officer is going to give he or she trouble, what they'll do then is move the receivables that are not collectible into an area called notes receivable. If the notes receivable, were not collectible as accounts receivable, how collectible are they now? They're not. I hate to tell you this. You're not going to find many that are legitimate. So what do? Give them back to the seller and lower the price. Why pay that money?
This concludes Side 1. To continue, please turn the cassette over.